Dari, 2019, another football season upon us. What do you look forward to most this year? How is this year going to be different than any other year that you've covered college football?
I look forward to what I hope is the continual rise of the East to some degree. There are teams over there who will challenge Georgia. I think Florida really will. I think Missouri's obviously interesting, and they're getting a lot of buzz. I look forward to the quarterback play in the league, too. I mean, just the amount of experience that we've got back. From Tua and Fromm to, look at transfers. What's Arkansas going to do? Chad Morris year two. I think there's a lot of really interesting stories in here. And A&M, what kind of rise do they continue to have, and can they manage a difficult schedule? So, like, the league top to bottom is maybe, you could argue, even deeper than it's been in the last couple of years, which two teams in the playoffs, maybe that happens again.
I was talking about this yesterday with some guests. I love Major League Baseball, I love the NFL, but then when I talk about college football, it's just a different feel. I literally can talk college football year-round on my show.
Yeah.
And I look at the glass half-full kind of thing. I'm very optimistic. I look at the bright side of these college athletes, what they mean and represent as far as on the field, but also beyond. We look at the 42 leaders on those campuses.
Yeah.
and the impact that they have not only with the football program, but the impact that they have in their communities.
There's no doubt. And this is why people come to this conference and play, is because of the attention they get, not just from NFL scouts, which is extensive, but also from the fans here that put so much time, financial investment into getting to know who they are, getting to know their stories, getting to know them, trying to know them better. They impact, these players come here from all over the country, and they impact lives of people they have never met in ways that frankly may not happen if they go anywhere else in the country. Outside of a few select special locations and programs, conference-wide, you just don't have that anywhere like you do here. So, they do. They're more than just football players when they come into this league, that's for sure, and students.
Last year, SEC, 11 teams went bowl games, 11 of the 14.
Yeah.
This year, I'm looking up and down in the West and the East. You see a lot of good teams, and you also see some great teams. I was talking about the fact that, just counting them out, depending on if everything plays out right, 7 teams with the capability of winning a conference title. But also when you talk about 14.
That's deep, really?
Exactly. And then you start thinking about 14 good teams. That means we're going to see some really nice upsets in 2019.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go – I can't go 7 deep and who can win a conference title. But
Well, here they are. Yeah. I'm going to go Alabama, Texas A&M, LSU, Auburn. On the East, I'm going to go, obviously, Georgia, Florida. I'm going to throw Missouri as that dark horse
incredible
possibility with Kelly Bryant.
That would be – I like Missouri to challenge in the East, but then you get them into a situation where they're playing, let's say, Alabama, and I don't know that I give them a shot in Atlanta. But my goodness, it'd be great to see them in that situation with that opportunity.
But remember,
A&M's schedule's so difficult. I just don't know how they begin to. I think A&M will be a better team than last year. They just may not win as many games as they won.
But look at Georgia, Florida. Besides the opponents that they have in the East, they also have to go over and get LSU, pick up Auburn as well.
Yeah.
I mean, so that makes it a lot more difficult.
It does. It's. Yeah. How about the fact that, too, we've got 7 crossover matchups we haven't had in at least the 5 years of the network, of the SEC network that we've had, including in Alabama, South Carolina, we haven't had since 2010, and what, A&M, and now I it slips my mind who they're playing that they haven't faced ever since they joined the SEC. So, it's a league of great storylines. I don't know that it's as – I wouldn't go 7 deep to win it, but I hear you on it. 11 bowl teams, I think everybody in the East could bowl. I think Kentucky could take a bit of a step back, although I don't think it's going to be a dramatic step. I think Vanderbilt wins 6 games. Arkansas and the Mississippi schools are really where I have the bigger questions.
And that's where we come down to, and I've been throwing this out there, 5 plays, the difference between a great team and a championship team. Same thing can be said about a below-average team and a bowl-eligible team. Handful of plays can get them over the edge.
That's right. I mean, if you look at Arkansas, they didn't win a game in league play last year. They won 2 games all year. Well, now, Chad, you've seen all of the departures from players that don't fit his system, the arrivals of players that do. You've got, 2 experienced quarterbacks that are going to have an opportunity to play. They'll be fun to watch. I don't know that they get to 6 wins. Mississippi State, how do they replace the guys on defense that they lost? And I think Ole Miss is very interesting. With the hires that Matt Luke made. And I love that Matt Luke hired 2 guys that have been successful at the head coaching ranks. He's not looking over his shoulder. If there's insecurities within Matt Luke, you're not seeing it with the hires. I think it's still going to be a struggle to win games, but to your point, would not shock me if what if Ole Miss knocks off an LSU out of the blue.
Absolutely.
Crazier things have certainly happened than that, yeah.
By the way, Tennessee-Vanderbilt, you know, I think they get there at in a different path. You know, I have Tennessee getting off to a strong start, 3-0. I have Vanderbilt going 1-2 in their first three games. That all evens out. Going into the final game in Knoxville, I have both teams 7-4.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Wouldn't that be fun there? I hope Vanderbilt's one of the programs I think a lot of people just kind of root for. We realize the challenges that they have, and being able to recruit to a school with the academic standards that they certainly have. I love Derek Mason. I love the leap of faith they took in him, giving him the extension. You know, there's a lot of change within that university, as we
Absolutely.
Well know, and that's a vote of confidence I think that he needed. And
you see
and
the baseball team winning a second national title in six years. You know, just like we talk about winning championships at Alabama, it breeds success with the other programs on that campus. Same thing can apply to a Vanderbilt, for example.
There's no question. You saw it, too, with the way Derek Mason was the Jerry Stackhouse. We saw him in Omaha. Heck, James Franklin, the former Vanderbilt head coach,
Absolutely.
Was in
he
Omaha
was getting a
well.
Lot of grief, too, from Big Ten country.
Yeah, too bad. You know what? Because he's close to the Corbins and his wife, you know, they're very close families, and good for him, you know. And you would love to think that the football team can feed off that a little bit. I remember talking to Derek Mason in Omaha, and I said, are you gonna have Tim Corbin come talk to your team? He goes, I've done it in the past, I'm gonna do it again, because there are lessons that we can learn from him and his guys.
We look at this year, you know, Alabama has lost games before. You know, they lost a national championship and the final offensive play by Clemson three seasons ago. From an Alabama standpoint, you have to go back to, and I was jokingly talking about this with the Music City Bowl, the very first Music City Bowl in 98, last time Alabama lost a game as far as a margin of a loss like they did against Clemson.
Yeah.
I bring it up because we look back how, I was talking about this with Gene Chizik earlier, the fact that after Alabama lost that Iron Bowl in 2010 when they were up 24-0, they lose 28-27. Players had to see that score throughout that offseason. Trent Richardson, Mark Barron, everybody was just so – it was just eating at them and fueling them. And then we go back, how is the 44-16 loss going to motivate this Alabama
team? Well, I would think the same. Remember 2 years ago when they lost to Clemson, Nick Saban came to media days and he had the great line, never waste a failure.
And there was two teams saying that too, by the way. Alabama and a Vanderbilt team said the same
thing. Did they say the same thing? Yeah,
exactly.
So, you know, of course, Saban gets more attention for saying
right.
it because there aren't many of them, right? There aren't many failures.
Well, you don't want to admit to it.
Well, no, you're right. But there's no question it's fueled him. And that's one of the first things anybody will ask him tomorrow when he's up there is, you know, how are you different this offseason? We'll ask him, how are you different this offseason? And, no, I certainly think that there's going to be a fire. And, oh, by the way, his entire staff is going to be well aware. Steve Sarkisian comes in. There's not much leash there. Sark's had plenty of his own sets of issues, right? And here he goes. He gets another opportunity here with Nick Saban. And, it's going to fuel them. We know there's enough talent for them to bounce back.
By the
best
way,
recruiting class probably ever in any, you know, by any program.
By the way, visiting with Dari Noka, but I don't really have to say that because I grew up to a voice of Howard Cosell, and not saying that you sound like Howard Cosell, but you don't sound like anybody else.
Okay, that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
That's a good thing, yeah. Yeah, and the good thing is I've never smoked a single cigarette, so that's good too. sometimes I'll read some of it. He sounds like he smoked a pack of cigarettes. No, I've never smoked a
cigarette. Hey, do you ever do karaoke? How does that voice relate?
I can't sing for Jack. I can't sing.
See, I can speak well, but singing, no.
Yeah.
No.
So you know who I'll do. My all-time favorite group is AC/DC.
Okay, good.
So I can go in a little Brian Johnson AC/DC. Like I'll do a little Back in Black or Money Talks or Thunderstruck. Yeah, but
did you ever go to one of their concerts? By the way, Thunderstruck is my opening song for all my show.
Is it really?
Yep, absolutely.
I've seen them three times and I loved it every time.
The last time I saw them, I was basically deaf for about 3 days because they are so loud.
I took my wife the last time in Boston in 2009, and she said, "Yeah, I'd seen them in Kansas City and two times in Kansas City." It was louder this time. In their last two. I mean, Brian Johnson now doesn't have hearing in one of his ears.
I can understand why.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, we've never talked about this. We go back to – we talk 9/11, and we talk about, you know, things that have happened from that standpoint. In September 20th, 2011, so 10th anniversary, you know, from the standpoint of what our country went through, and then you personally went through something that month, and, you know, unfortunately it's something that parents should never have to go through. You lost your infant son.
Yeah.
And what I like about and throughout my life, I try to do this too. When I take something that's an obstacle, something that bad has happened in my life, I try to find the silver lining, and you and your wife did that.
I will never forget, Johnny, as we're sitting in the hospital and we're talking to so many people, as we basically lived in a hospital for 39 days, more or less, or 36 of them. You know, and I'll be wide open on this here. We are not a religious or spiritual family, okay? And that's out there, and if that rubs people the wrong way, I'm sorry. But one of the people that we spent a lot of time with is a cantor at a local synagogue. And just because we connected so well with him, and he used a line that said, when tragedy strikes, you have two choices. You can let it crush you, or you can say, what can I do with this?
Exactly.
And right, I mean, it was obvious. What can I do with this? You know, we had a lot of support from my company with ESPN. We had a lot of support nationally from people who had just heard the story and picked up on the story. And so that's where we started a foundation called Hayden's Hope, and in Hayden's name. And, you know, we raise money for families of children who are awaiting a life-saving organ transplant. Hayden died while he was waiting for a heart transplant. And, you know, to this day, we just crossed the $300,000 mark, you know, in about 7.5 years. We've helped almost 60 families coast to coast. And, no, we're very proud of being able to do that and keep Hayden's legacy alive, because, you know, he fought like hell in those times and in all those days he spent in that bed and tubes and, you know, everything else that he had to deal with. And he fought like hell, and, you know, it would be ridiculous to let his passing go without, you know, trying to fight to help others.
You know, that's a tough decision to make, whether you're an athlete, former athlete, analyst, broadcaster, whatever the case may be, you know, as far as, you know, there's so many folks watching, listening to you throughout the year, and they think that you have a charmed life, per se, but you also have an opportunity, depending on, in your case, you've made the most of this tragedy. But, you know, everybody in your position, you have an opportunity to influence so many people in a positive way. And it's one of these things where I certainly tip the hat to those that do it. And unfortunately, not everybody does that.
Yeah. Well, no, I appreciate it. And, you know, we didn't really do it because I guess because we had, you know, maybe the traction that it had gained on a national level helped us do it. We would have done it anyways. But, yeah, I mean, you know, if there are people out there and they see people on TV or radio or with jobs they'd love to have, you know, it's really kind of shallow to sit and say, oh, they've got everything. Everybody's got crap, man. Everybody has got crap. We've got it in our family. We've got it in the same problems that most of the same problems that everybody else has. You know, we all have them too. And, you know, the ultimate tragedy is losing your son, especially a child that was born healthy as he was. I mean, he got sick in his first days. He was completely healthy and at home with us. So it happened, and you know, we've tried to move forward.
Before we let you go,
Haydenshope.org, by the way.
Oh,
I never
you.
Did mention that. Yeah, Haydenshope.org, yeah.
Before I let you go, you know, talk about behind the scenes. What's a typical day for you during a college football weekend?
Well, Saturdays are my busiest day. I mean, Saturdays I do Dari and Mel on ESPN Radio. I'm in the office at about 6:15. We go on the air 7 to 10. I go home after that. I'm home by 10:30. I leave back for work to handle the TV stuff at about 2:30, so I've got 4 hours where I'm running with kids. We're hanging out, doing whatever we can do, go outside and play a game of Madden or FIFA or something with my son, hang out with the girls, do whatever I can do, whatever. Go to lunch, and then come right back to work. So those are the long days, and then we're at work. Chizik, Doring, and I are doing our stuff, you know, in between games, after games, post end of the night show on Saturday night. We usually leave that building somewhere in the 1 to 1:30 range. And on occasion, you know, we'll slip out and have a beer together and recap the ridiculously wild day we just saw.
Dari, as always, it's always fun catching up with you.
Johnny, I appreciate it, man. Thank you.